Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin?
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We're live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, Instagram, Kick, LinkedIn. I'm not going to say anything about LinkedIn this time. I'm just going to let it be.
Alex, how many of those do you think they'll have to be before you get? Like, you almost took a heavy sigh in the middle there. When do you think it's going to be like, and doop-doop?
I mean, it's getting there. Nothing against Kick, which so far has only delivered spam in our comments, but Kick's pretty close because I'm like, I don't know what that is.
I like the Kick spam.
Kick is fun, man.
You like the Kick spam?
If you're spamming on Kick, you're a frontiersman.
For anybody who doesn't
know
this, so for anybody who's not watching us on Kick, there are comments, they're all spam commenters, and they're all like, very heavily negging us, like, ooh, you're not getting a lot of views for this stream.
I don't think that's a human saying that, Alex, if it's any consolation.
Really?
I feel like...
Okay.
Is right. It really grinding your gears? I see you get smash your keyboard every show.
It's pretty upsetting. I've given them a crazy amount of credit card information, though, so fingers crossed it's going to turn around something soon.
That's what you call payday. Steve in the private chat says, when are you getting on GeoCities? And soon. That's the final one.
Ooh, oh, nice. Man. I would love to. I miss it. I miss it every single day. And that's a great tee up because we got a packed show for you guys. We have a ton of guests. And our first pair, they are two of the guys behind the Valiant Beyond relaunch that's happening. They're writing All New Harbinger and the Exo Manowar, respectively. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show, Fred Van Lente and Steve Orlando.
Yay!
Hello!
Yay! Welcome back!
Very excited to have you both back here. Very excited to talk about this. So Valiant Beyond is this relaunch. It's a new reader-friendly line. So if you've never read Harbinger before, if you've never read Exo Manowar before, you ostensibly can jump in right with this. And just to mention up front, before I forget, Harbinger is on sale tomorrow, and Exo Manowar is on sale September 17th. So these are coming in very soon. Before we even get into the specifics about the book, you guys have written a bunch of this stuff before, and I know, like, you're old heads at this sort of thing anyway, but, like, when you're writing something that you've written before or a world that you've understand before, how do you sort of like wash that out of your brain and then be like, this is new, I'm hitting it again?
Well, the good news about the Valiant Beyond relaunch is this is really a different sort of universe. It's an ultimate universe to a certain degree. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely.
I was going to say that myself. And actually, and it's also sort of a weird thing because like all the books kind of got started at different times. And I think a lot of what got laid down actually was laid down by Steve in XO, in the background of XO. And I was just told what he was doing. And I'm like, I'm going to do that. And so we all could kind of end up piggybacking everybody else.
And I actually, you know, so I actually haven't worked for Valiant before.
But
I have done violence before. So
you mean personally in your real life?
I think about it all the time. I was a big fan. It's a little different for me. On one hand, you know, I did debut on Midnighter. I remember taking the train down from Albany and seeing you guys in person. Back in the day. Now I live in Boston, and I could still take the train. It's just slightly longer. but I work for DC, so I would fly instead because I'm pretentious. But the point remains, like, I started on the Sex and Violence book, and then I kind of did all these books, you know, like I did Wonder Woman for 3 years, which I had an absolute blast on, and I put a lot of the stuff I learned doing Disaster Relief into that. But it's not an Exploding Heads book. Okay. So to come back to Exo Manowar, and get to be the guy that does Gonzo Violence again. Now, there's more that the book is about, and we'll talk about it, but I have to say it's been a pleasure to probably surprise people who met me in other things. Like, there are some shocking moments and that it goes with the territory when you're writing, colloquially Conan in the Iron Man suit, functionally a 2000 plus year old Visigoth with a different set of morals. So I came close, and I don't even know if Fred knows this, but I was almost the writer of Gunslinger back in like 2016 as part of Hardcore, I believe he was.
But it didn't work
out because I signed an exclusive and it just didn't work out. So I've been circling Valiant for a long time, but I've never really gotten in until now. That being said, Robert Venditti, one of my closest friends in the business, we just saw him at my wedding a couple of weeks ago. So to be able to come on XO and sort of not build off what he did, because this is a fresh start, but honor what he did, honor the acclaim and Valiant stuff as well. Really, really important for me. Robert was one of the first guys to show me kindness in the business. He is a Southern gentleman. it's really,
that's important.
It is. It's been very good, and it's worth noting. I said this earlier today because I was talking about Harbinger on a different recording earlier today.
What?
Well.
Wow! Second fiddle. Here we go. You're taking planes and doing multiple podcasts. What's happening?
You guys give me for longer, so you know, like, that's what really matters. Staying power, as we discussed before we started recording. But Fred may not even know this, but I was really, I breathed a sigh of relief when he came on, because he is the guy that made me love most of Valiant.
Yes.
I said it earlier, I knew about XO because I, you know, was a 7-year-old boy in the Valiant era, and he was cool looking. But I never really connected with a lot of the other Valiant stuff in the original Valiant and Acclaim era. When Fred got on Archer and Armstrong, look, I'll be honest, and I'll fluff him up a little bit on this call. That's the first time I loved the characters. I found out why they
Fred signaling more fluff with his hands for
I just gotta flatten out the blowjob. So anyway, like, that's a 20-year-old reference to Derek comedy. So welcome, people.
I'm here with you, Derek comedy. I just saw DC Pearson on Friday. So,
You get wrist control and then you pull out your gun. So anyway, I was really excited to be working with Fred on this, and I am really excited for Harbinger. So it's a good segue for him to talk about it, because to me, this is the guy that showed me why Valiant kicks ass. One of the two guys along with Robert. So I'm very happy to have him here.
Well, and like, while we're the term ultimate, I feel like, has been thrown around with this Valiant relaunch. We talked to AJ about Shadow Man, and for him, it was bringing in like the video game elements, the older elements, some of the stuff he'd introduced in his previous series. That feels very specific to Shadow Man. So if you want to talk about the books, I'm very curious what the ultimate idea means for you as you're putting these together.
Well, I think that, you know, what's cool is that what I always liked about the Valiant books was they always had sort of a different vibe to them. Like Archer Armstrong was a conspiracy book. Exo was sort of science fiction. Harbinger is, you know, let's tell it like it is, off-brand X-Men. I decided to lean heavily into off-brand X-Men. And what's cool is in Valiant and in general in Valiant Beyond, specifically, is we can do stuff Marvel can't do with the X-Men. Mainly we can have the Harbingers take over. And so it's very cool about, like I feel about, like, mutants the same way I feel about vampires. Like, if they actually existed, they would take over in about two years. Like, they would just, you know, us peons couldn't stand against them. So this is a city-state called Foundation City in what used to be Pittsburgh, which, you know, is Jim Shooter's hometown, which is why a lot of stuff is created.
Mm. Emanates Shout from out to the Berg.
Yep. The pit. and so the Harbinger team is the essentially official superhero team of Foundation City, which is being run by Peter Stanchek, who used to be the main character Harbinger. Now he's sort of the big boss overseeing everything. And we posit in our book that that there were Psiot Wars, there were Harbinger Wars, and Harada was killed, the sort of Magneto of this world, if you will, and Peter won, and so they're maintaining the city-state, which is free for all, humans and Psiots alike, and they're all being protected by the Harbinger team, but as we all suspect, there's always a serpent in Eden, there's always something problematizing the Utopia, and that really ultimately is what the book is about. There's pro-human terrorists who are not a fan of Psiots. There's the mysterious corporation Risen, which operates another city-state somewhere else in North America. North America is a bit of a mess in Valiant Beyond.
It sure is.
Sure is.
I'm sorry.
I do want to ask you, just because we brought it up on screen right here, and I've read the first issue. I won't get into spoilers, but again, it's on the cover. Archer is also on the team from Archer and Armstrong. Why bring him into the mix?
That was Mateus's idea, the head of Alien. He wanted more of a straightforward superhero book with Harbinger, and when he asked me to write it, and he specifically said he wanted Archer to not only be on the team, but he wanted Archer to lead the team. Archer is a character I've written since 2012, so I have a real familiarity with him. But it was cool to, because in this world, there's no, how spoilery to get. There's no association with Armstrong in this book that we, to speak of. So he's on his own. His father figure is Peter Stanchek in this particular universe. And, but he's just as, earnest and, forthright and does not swear. And I one of my favorite things about writing Archer is coming up with all the colorful non-swear swears that he uses.
Yeah.
Jason Bullcorn being my two favorite.
Nice.
He's definitely a bit of a fish out of water. And so, and you can tell from that image, Flamingo is there on his right. And the other characters, Cece, who's the girl with the green pigtails, she's a very major character. She appeared in, I think, The Harbinger, which was an earlier Valiant Universe book. But those other two characters are brand new, and I won't say anything about them. Read the book.
All right. One of the things that I really like about this is a very sci-fi, futuristic, inflected take versus what we get in X of Manowar, which may be taking place into the future, but it's a little more like, what if, this is how it struck me, what if X of Manowar was stuck in the middle of Mad Max Fury Road is kind of what I was getting there a little bit.
I can't argue with you, Alex, other than to say it's all that. But also, what if the writer was like a deeply deep fan of classic Russian literature and the publisher wouldn't say no to introducing a whole character, which you saw in the first issue, that is just my love letter to a famous, perhaps the most famous Nikolai Gogol short story.
Wow.
You know, it's all those things plus Russian lit. So this is what I bring to the table.
That's what ultimate means. Got it.
Yes, it means that is what it means. I was really, really excited to take EXO into this place. So there are differences. You're asking what ultimate means. For me, it means maintaining, like, yes, we are going back to the core of the character, and then we're seeing what's fungible. One of the things that's different, because again, like to me, if we're doing the same exact book, why is it the new
yeah.
book, right? That mm-hmm. doesn't mean you break the core of the character, because then we're not doing our job. But, you know, Ultimates Peter Parker, both the current one and the one from 25 years ago, were akin to the original one, and his core drives were the same, but it was different. It had to be different. The world around him was different. Otherwise, again, like what's the point of the book? So we're seeing where we can remix things with Exo, with Arik. And one of the big things, which is hinted at in the first issue, is that there's no time dilation in this version of the story. I love that beat in Robert's story. I loved it enough. I wouldn't fuck with it. So instead, it's the opposite. Very much so. Like, this is an Arik who has been conscious and alive and fighting, kept alive by the Shannara armor for over 2,000 years, most mm-hmm. of which was spent in this cosmic arena under new masters. It's not the Vine, it's someone else in this version. And that's affected him, as you might imagine. It his relationship with the armor and the entity inside it. It's affected his personality and what he's interested in. At the same time, he's still Arik. He's the guy you don't want to run into if you're misbehaving, and you see that in the first issue. Like he's on a quest for his honor. He spent thousands of years doing whatever it took to survive, and now this armor and this entity within the armor has challenged him, to actually quest and to find his honor. She has tried in the past, as you'll see in the issue, bonding with other people in the arena that already seemed honorable, and inevitably it went bad, like the One Ring. So instead, she has found this person in Arik of Daisha who has the seed and the potential to be an honorable man. And she said, well, let's walk this path together. And that's what they're doing on Earth. After returning to Earth after thousands of years in Arik's case, a planet he doesn't recognize, but he knows is his home. And he's the stranger who comes to town. You see him encounter the Earthborn in the first issue. Here he is, absolutely fucking them up.
Yeah,
with
nice
big
page,
wonderful art by Guillermo Fajardo.
He is
someone who always does exactly what he says he's going to do, even if he doesn't say much. And so he will stand up for people like this family that's under attack, one of whom is the Nose, as we come to find out. He will do at least what he believes is honorable, because he's trying to define that himself, and he's confounded by it after years and years of just doing what he has to stay alive. So he is a force on the Red Steppe, which is what we call the Wasteland. There's many different mm-hmm. factions out there. We have the Earthborn, who are our main threat for the first arc of this book. People who believe that they have been spit up from a womb inside the earth and that they're the true inheritors of this terrible future. They, of course, have no evidence for that, but they really believe it.
My uncle's an Earthborn.
But behind that is a villain who I think is a great person to smash up against Arik. They're led by a guy named Asher Typhon, and Typhon's ability is an intrinsic horror field. When you look at him, you basically see whatever for you is the most horrific thing possible. He's essentially like a boggart if it killed you or drove you insane. And so, when we see him in the first issue, here's this person, Arik, who believes he doesn't even fear anything, and he immediately sees how wrong he is. And of course, like the get back, the revenge is going to be even bloodier. I mean, I haven't had a book where I spell things out in bodies in a long time.
Wow.
But that's not all we're doing. We're celebrating other parts of Valiant as well. You saw the introduction of the punks, which was a concept created by Keith Giffen, and I have to cheat. Give me a minute. I do want to name the artist as well, but it escapes my mind. It was created by Keith Giffen and Keith Giffen, because he drew it as well.
Nailed it.
Not a chance, Steve. Crushing it.
Fast on the Google, though.
Like Fred, you know what's even more fucked up, despite me being a writer, is that I don't even notice it anymore, but I write with my left hand and my right index finger.
Why do you think that change is happening?
It's not a change.
This is a power. This is a power finger.
It's not a change. This is always what it was. But until I met people who took typing for real, They were like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But no, so we have the punks in there. It's funny, you know, Fred mentioned leaning into the off, you know, the off-brand X-Men. The punks to me very much seemed like the not the Doom Patrol for Valiant. So we are taking this very sturdy, very sort of dogmatic character in Arc, and we're mashing him up against the sort of the strangest people in the Valiant universe, the strangest powers, things like that. And you meet some of them in the first issue. There is the Nose. There's people from Keith's run as well. It's about 50-50. There's Aslan, who has to sacrifice people with other people in order to survive. She can eat food and drink water, but if she doesn't kill people every so often, she'll die. Wow. There's Cram, whose power is to fit into any space, no matter how small. People who know me can guess that that's going to be exploited to its fullest. and there's a variety of others that you meet, and there's new folks too. There's Careless Whisper, who can create drugs out of words and use them as weapons or bombs and things like that. Sort of a combination of like a little bit of Crazy Jane and Boom Boom.
That's my new favorite.
And there's Dr. Demolition, and Dr. Demolition is introduced in the first issue. Really, really excited about him. He's not just a new introduction to the book, but he's a love letter to me to things that were being done in the most recent and previous Valiant era. You know, like 30 years ago, we had the Gold Key characters, and they were integrated into the universe, and then they sort of went away for various reasons, and many like characters were introduced to sort of fill those roles. Someone like Divinity was filling the role, for example, that Solar did, but there was never someone who did or fit in the way that Magnus Robot Fighter did. And he was always been one of my favorite Gold Key characters, one of my favorite characters I've never worked on. So with Dr. Demolition, we're doing the Valiant, a new character in Valiant that can fit that role. And to that extent, yes, he is someone who, for reasons that come up in the book, is very good specifically at beating the shit out of machines.
Now, given, I almost hesitate to ask this because like, I think one of the joys of starting a new universe is, hopefully they're separate, like they're running their own tracks, they're doing their own thing. But given you're both doing titles that are set in an indeterminate amount to the future, how much coordination needs to go on to figure out like, oh, this takes place this year, that affects that, versus back and forth?
We had a very, 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 very long email chain about when the apocalypse happened.
Yes.
And finally I was like, what about this year? And everybody's like, okay. You know, because you don't want it to be so far. My characters are young, they're like teenage and your lower 20s. So my thing was, I wanted most of people who just graduated high school in my book to have a vague memory of what happened before. You know what I mean? So the reader has some kind of relation, so it's not completely crazy and totally separate from their reality. But I also wanted to be there enough time to have
things get weird.
Things get weird, have mythology, have old grudges. I mean, we have this whole background of the Psyot Wars, so there's people running around Foundation City who supported Harada, who are blowing up buildings and kind of refute that it's the lost cause, right? The Harada loyalists are refusing to lay down their arms. That's like the Harbinger people have to deal with. And Hardcore, we'll see Gunslinger in Harbinger 7. That's coming.
Wow.
The Beyond version of Hardcore is especially twisted, Steve. I hope you appreciate it.
I probably will.
And I shout out, Steve very rightly mentioned Robert Venditti. I should mention Josh Dysart, who I adore as a person and as a writer. And I'm really kind of this. A lot of this is me inheriting his work, kind of running with it. So it was so awesome to work with characters, many of which Josh himself created.
Awesome.
And Steve, for you, I mean, maybe I'm drawing lines that don't actually exist there, but setting Exo Manowar a couple of thousand years in the future, at the same time over at Marvel, you're doing 2099 and 3099 and everything like that. What is appealing to you about these far future time periods?
Oh, well, so to confirm, I mean, this is set in the present.
Beyond books are set in 2025.
Never mind.
But
we're very fucked up. If you didn't think 2020, if 2025 currently is not fucked up enough for you,
it's not
going great, guys.
You can see
based on my line of questioning and understanding of what's going on in this book, not going great.
come into Valiant Beyond.
But yeah, no, I mean, he was alive thousands of years ago and is still alive in the present day. But that being said, you're not far off as far as the presentation because so much has changed. And, you know, for better or worse, doing something like 2099, I hate to say it now, but it's not the far future anymore, folks. It's the near future. I like the idea that you can sort of take swings on how things might evolve. Like, and what I mean when I say that is like the more compelling non-joke version of how in Futurama everybody says ax instead of ask, you know, and that's just normal now. Now that's obviously a joke, but I like how you can sort of extrapolate it. To me, that's what's especially speculative fiction versus science fiction is for. And so, you know, while, you know, you're asking like, how do we coordinate? The good news is that our books, I mean, to be frank, all take place in the same time period in vastly different places. Although the cast of EXO will be making a pilgrimage towards Fred's area towards the end of our first year.
Exciting.
But for context, without any type of like infrastructure, they don't even call Foundation City the same thing. They don't even know if it's real. But it's mythical for them, for people like the punks. I like being able to, I think when you're in a time period that is close enough to the present, that there's still relatability, you know, that like people can still talk like us. And as Fred said as well, have sort of common references. I think it becomes a joy to comment on and extrapolate from our current moment. That's what I try to do with 2099. It's what will be going on with Spider-Man 3099 when he debuts in the next 2099 series. And with EXO, I like to call into question, you know, even though this is a book that is, yeah, as you said, very Mad Max-esque, though it is going to take a variety of other swings. Issue 5, for example, takes place completely inside Arik's head, inside the world he shares with Shannara.
Wow.
Much more like, if there was a violent version of Talking with David from Starman.
I mean, those are pretty violent, too. They beat shit out of a cemetery.
I suppose that is true. You know, we want to switch it up. I more than specifically doing spec fiction with EXO, like, it's weird to say because by many factors, this is one of the most traditional books I've done. It's about punching in the face and gorily destroying evil. But look, I came up in the late 80s and early 90s, and I love that the heavy action books could also be the provocative weird books. That's what I hope for with EXO. He is, like, you know, in major action movies, especially in the 80s, it seemed to be a thing, at least I theorized that they, like, oftentimes directors and writers just wanted to see how much they could get these hunks of meat to do. Does Arnold Schwarzenegger really need to put a towel on his head and pull a giant knob through his nose in Total Recall? Like, I really, my theory is that they were just like, let's see what this Austrian piece of meat is willing to do.
He wants to do it, guys.
I do want to smash this relatively traditional character in EXO, relatively, up against these strange places and strange setups, because that to me, I mean, that's what made me love action storytelling. That's what made me love this whole genre.
Well, and it strikes me that Valiant, even back in when it first came out in the 90s, was like high action, weird stuff happens. During that, and that felt like a difference maker from the other books coming out from like Marvel, DC, and Image. But here, talking to you guys, it strikes me you both are working so much, and you have worked for so many years, and it's often big world creation. Why are you so tired? How are you so tired? How are you awake right now? But what I was going to ask is like sort of that, like how are you like resting your brain and then diving into a new pool? What is your practice? Are you just like vomiting a bunch of ideas out when you're sort of at the beginning of something like this? Are you meticulously putting in buckets, whiteboard? Like what's the practice?
I'm lucky because I've really never done a book like Harbinger before. Like I've never done like high concept superhero soap opera. And that's really what this is. And it's like, you know, who's dating who? What's exploding? Whose face is being punched in? You know what I mean? Like it's just the complete, range of backstabbing and people being jealous of each other and buildings falling over and explosions. It's just a lot of fun. I do have to admit, whenever I'm, it is like going to the bar whenever I get to, like, you know, write a new issue of Harbinger, because it's like, all right, get the kicker feet up and let's see what the gang's gotten up to this month, you know.
Wow.
I've got buckets of great characters I've been handed from the Harbinger and Hardcore, and I wrote a book for Valiant called Generation Zero. It's the Generation Zero. The main villain of the first issue is this villain, Black Sheep, who is this insane cheerleader who has superpowers as long as she thinks she has superpowers. It's a very strange character. Wow. Who's become a terrorist in this world. And she's just tons of fun. So it helps that, like, I literally have, like, hundreds of characters. Like, I just hope I can throw them all in the series during its run.
Awesome.
And Steve, what about you? Your process for crafting whole universes?
Well, yesterday I was doing my home exercise because freelance writer, and the dude who was doing the video, who was exhausting, by the way, never just type in 10-minute like hit workout into YouTube. You will get absolute clowns. But I did. And this guy was like, "All right, you feeling the burn? You're going to walk in place. It's called active rest." And so active rest is kind of what active I do rest. By necessity. You know, like, you can rest. It's, or, you know, like, listen, I would love if I could luxuriate and spend weeks to write every book that I have to turn in, but I'm not there right now. So what I have to do is essentially like that, right? Or in the same way that fish sleep with only one hemisphere of their brain at a time. So I try to, yes, I have to do a lot. I try to make sure that they're all very different is the answer, so that you are kind of resting one muscle when you're doing the other. And I haven't really done a book like EXO really since Midnighter. Like, the amount of times when I've been able to not get, like, dialed back when I say, like, and then this character stomps through someone's chest it hasn't been since Midnighter that I could do that stuff. I mean, the kill shot that comes in XO4 is one of my proudest and most depraved things I've thought of. And this is me who had Midnighter kill someone with a meat tenderizing mallet and then did a close-up of it where it said tough meat on one side. So I feel like you just have to, yes, if you have to take a lot, I try to make sure they're not the same types of gigs. You know, I'm doing this, I'm doing Scarlet Witch, I'm doing a little bit of 2099, which is in the future. I'm doing another book for Alien that is set in a more agrarian setting. Man, anything else would spoil it.
Very nice. Stuff. I love agrarian stuff.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. And so, like, that's got to be what it is. You know, there are, I will tell the story that I might have even told on Comic Book Live in the past, because it's a true story that is formative for me. When I was still when I still had a shoot job during the day, my boss was an MFA from Columbia, and he asked me, one who had never published at 50. And he asked me at the time, you know, "Steve, you know, you work here all day and you go home and then you still find time to write every night. How do you do it?" And I said, "Well, you know, Michael, I work here, which including my commute is a 14-hour day. And then I drive home, I eat dinner for an hour and I write for 3 hours and I go to bed and I do it again every day." And he said, "Well, you know, that's what makes you that's what makes you a professional. And me an artist." And I was like, "Cool, man."
Oh, man.
The point is, and just, you know.
And that's where you get your violence from.
but it is like, it would be nice. It's a luxury to be able to, like, have that amount of time. But we are, you know, like, I'm a guy who likes no quote better than Jack Kirby's quote about being just like a blue collar workman like artist. And that's what I try to be like. But you do have to make sure you're not doing the same kind of stuff everywhere, ideally.
Right.
I think you would sort of wear down. You know, you got to let those ideas regenerate.
Cool.
Great.
We're going to have to wrap up in a second. And Steve, I know you just plugged a bunch of stuff that you've got going on that people definitely should check out. We're loving everything you're doing. But Fred, what about you? Anything else you want to plug other than the Valiant stuff?
Yes, I have ongoing my Cyberpunk Mission Impossible series, The Future Is, *... which the fifth issue is about to drop, 5 of 60, 6-0, so, you know,
wow.
Jump on board, you've got 5 years. But it's going fantastic. And that's the reception's great. In the Congrats. Fall, there will be another installment of Die No Might. That's Die with an exclamation point, which is my Dynamite Comics zombie crossover. Red all your favorites plus zombies. This is the fourth series, so I thought I'd try something a little different. Lean in sort of the very female heavy Dynamite stable. In this zombie apocalypse, only men can become zombies. Mm-hmm. So tell all your men's rights friends to pick up your comic stores. But women can become zombies, but they can become lunch, so they're motivated to fight back, of course. I know I'm missing something.
Fred, didn't you just write a prose book? I set you up.
I've written several. My latest was Bloodshot, actually. Came out in January. And that had a very nice reception. There are a bunch of Valiant novels, prose novels, coming out, like Eternal Warrior, I think, is the next one. And then Livewire is getting her own book, and so is...
Cool.
Oh. Are they set in their own continuity, or are they all kind of... They are. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, neat. It's
very, very, very different stuff. But the Bloodshot one's got a real nice response, which is fantastic. Awesome. And I used a bunch of that stuff in Harbinger. So.
Yeah. Awesome, guys. So good to see you. So good talking about the stuff. Excited to follow these titles as usual.
Thank you for all the amazing work. We love your work. Keep it up, please.
All right.
See you soon, guys.
We'll talk soon. Bye, guys. All right. There we go. Once again, the books are all new Harbinger, which is on sale tomorrow from Valiant. So check that out. And also the Exo Man of War that's coming out the week after on September 17th.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game. Delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
And folks, we are not done with the show yet. We have two more amazing guests for you. As we promised this pack, they've been very patient, and we appreciate it, but we're excited to have them in to talk about Nira, a Constance Evermore story, which is coming out September 16th, excuse me, not 17th, from Bad Hand Books. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Stagowski and Janine Atchison, hello, hey, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for your patience. Thank you for coming. I'm excited to talk about this. So you guys have worked together pretty extensively before, but this is kind of like a new thing for you, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, for her, yeah.
Oh, for her.
Okay. For her. I mean, I've written tons. I've written like 40 books. So, but it was new for Janine not to come into this, especially this.
Well, but you. Yeah, but you two have collaborated before.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
given that this was a novella, what was different, if anything, about the process?
We had to go back to our novel writing process, which was done mostly over Skype and in Google Docs. And during the pandemic, we wrote a novel together. And then we started doing comic work. And that's like completely different, and it's a completely different mindset and something that I had to learn like completely from scratch. But when we started writing Nira, we were back on Google Docs again, and it took us like a good, I think like a few weeks to kind of find our groove and to start writing prose again, because we had been immersed in comics for like it was like 3 years or something.
Yeah.
So it was challenging. It was really challenging, but we persevered. We did it.
I'm curious to ask more about this, just from the creative perspective. Like, was there a moment where it started to snap in, where it broke, where you were like, oh, okay, we're rocking and rolling now? And if so, what was that? Or was it just a kind of a gradual process of getting back in the groove?
I think once you kind of like stumble and fall and delete and go back, and you start to like almost like get the rhythm. Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference in writing prose and writing comics. There's an enormous difference in the mindset. So I find that it's, especially when I've been doing comics for as long as I had been doing, it was like lifting weights. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, all right,
build the muscle back up.
Yeah. I gotta build that muscle up again. And Janine, it was still in that process where she's kind of like, all right, come on, Tom, let's go. Let's go.
She's been lifting weights on her own.
Yeah, come on, Mr. 40 Books, let's get going.
Yeah, but I rely on him to do most of the really heavy lifting.
When
you are, maybe you're about to ask the same thing, Justin, but not to keep on this track, but I am really curious, like, how do you break up the duties then? Or is it really just like, write a paragraph, write a paragraph, write a page, write a page?
We don't really, we have a little bit like divided and conquered, but most of the time for drafting and for editing, we work together. So
at the same time?
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Do you do that thing where you try to talk at the same time? Yeah. No, nobody. All right.
Yeah.
Nobody.
And sometimes, one of us will write a sentence, and one of us will go, "Oh, how about this?" And we go back and forth, and it's literally in the same document.
Oh my God! I feel like that's what a lot of people think collaboration writing is.
Yeah.
I've just never heard of people actually doing it that way.
Yeah. When we first wrote our first novel together, like in 2021, I think, after I was still teaching, I had said to Tom, it was during the pandemic, and I had said, boy, I wish that I could just like, as we planned to do, like, you do a chapter, I'll do a chapter or a scene or whatever. And I remember saying, I wish I could just sit beside you and like hear you think out loud as you're working.
No, you don't want to know that. You don't want to. No one wants to hear that.
But I was like, you know what? And then the pandemic hit, and we couldn't get together anyway. So I'm like, let's do this over Skype. And he's like, well, we've only got Word documents. So I'm like, we got Google Docs, baby. We can be in that document together. And we did the first. We planned to just do the first like couple of chapters that way. But it kind of stuck, and it kind of like grew on us. It just became the way that was most comfortable for us to work. I think for me, because I hadn't written anything except academic things for my students prior to that. Oh, wow. So it was a huge learning curve for me, like all of this writing, comics, novels, novellas, everything. But it's just, that's what worked for us. We just kind of stuck with it.
That's really awesome. Amazing. Jumping back, Tom, to what you said about sort of the switching between comic writing and prose writing. Is the muscle difference between like the visual, like you're describing it for an artist in comics, and then you're describing it for the reader in prose?
I think with comic scripting, your brain is aware that the artist is probably going to be doing most of the heavy lifting
in terms of
the visual aspect of the comic, which is, you know, incredibly important to a comic. So with prose writing, you're doing all the work. You've got to paint that picture for your reader.
Yeah.
So I think that's the two giant parts that have to kind of switch off with comics and prose writing.
And I guess when you're writing, describing a panel to an artist, you can be like, and you know, a bunch of buildings in the back. It's harder to do that.
But it all depends on your confidence with the artist.
Like, right, true.
Like working with an artist that I've worked with before, I know what they're capable of. I can say, you know, that thing that I always do.
Yeah.
The guy, you know, do that. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh yeah, I know that. And they do it. But if it's somebody you've never worked with before, you have to be much more specific in terms of like your angles and your, this is a close up, this is pull back on this shot, aerial shot, all that stuff. You have to, because you're not quite sure what you're going to get back.
Right.
And you want to get back the best thing possible. So yeah, there's a difference between guys you work with and guys you haven't worked with before.
Let's talk. Argyles. There you go. Why don't we talk about the work that we're talking about tonight, which is Nira Constance Evermore story. So what was the inspiration behind this? Because like we said, you guys have done a ton before. So what drew you to this story in particular?
Do you want me to do?
Yeah, should we start with Tom Brown?
Yeah.
So Tom had worked with an artist named Tom Brown, and he contacted Tom out of the blue one day and said, hey, I'm working with this new publisher and he's looking for novellas. And if I could illustrate something for you, maybe you could get something together and we could do a project. And that you guys hadn't worked together since The Raven's Child.
Yeah, The Raven's Child was for Random House.
Tom said, well, you know, let me think about it and I'll get back to you. And then he approached me with it and I was like, yeah, let's do it. Cause I say yes to everything. And so Nira came about. We decided that we would do something. We put a pitch together and it was a story or an idea that we had about a woman born with a call. And it was just in a document that we keep full of ideas, like random ideas or things we find interesting. We just kind of throw it in there. And this character was very not fleshed out at all, but we kind of figured that this was the right one.
That's what you know. Awesome.
We'll talk about working with Thomas Brown because in case it wasn't clear to people listening, it's still illustrated, even if it's not full on comics. So how did that feed into the process of creating this?
Tom is just like, he's just got such a very specific look work that, while we were coming up with our ideas and concepts and putting together our proposal pitch for Bad Hand, we'd occasionally get like sketches like, hey, I'm thinking of this and I'm thinking about this. And that would kind of like go, oh, that would kind of almost like feed the inspiration.
Oh, that's great.
To enhance something a little bit more and say, oh, he did that with this drawing just based on the simple, one sentence idea we gave him. Let's take that one simple one sentence and enhance it even more based on what he's given us. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of that kind of, it kind of fed our creative juices in terms of the actual work when we started to see his illustrations.
That's so great. Nice.
Yeah, he's great. He's a nice guy. The craziest mustache you'll ever see in your life.
Really?
Love that. Yeah,
talk about painting a picture. I've seen some crazy stashes.
Yeah, he looks like a steampunk with the crazy the wild mustache and stuff. Yeah, he's great.
I did want to ask you about Bad Hand Books a little bit, not to swerve away directly from Nira, but I think they're doing some really interesting stuff. They've got the End Times, if people haven't heard with this, Benjamin Percy is probably very familiar to people on our podcast. He's creating a horror story through a newspaper, which is pretty cool. And they have a bunch of other fun projects, yours included. Yep. So what are they bringing to the table? You're giving a big nod here, Tom. So what's it been like?
I mean, Janine and I are absolutely captivated by Doug Marano, who's the like editor in chief, the owner of the company. It's like a one man operation. And this guy is like fantastic. He's amazing. The people that he's getting to come over and do things for them, it's astounding. Like Stephen King is doing part of that Benjamin Percy thing. That's amazing that he got King involved with something. Chris Golden is doing a bunch of stuff with them. Mike Mignola is doing stuff with me and Janine. We're doing new Grimdeath stories for them.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, I have nothing but praise for this guy because he's one of those guys that as soon as you start to talk with him, you kind of get a sense that he knows exactly what you're talking about. And he's excited by it too. There's no like barrier. There's no like, oh, let me think about that a little bit, and then we'll get back. It's like, yeah, that would be fantastic. We're gonna do that. That'd be great.
I love that.
Yeah, the enthusiasm. I mean, our very first Zoom call with him, I was like, I threw up my hands at the end, and I was like, I want to work with this guy all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, especially after working for, like, I've worked with, you know, Simon & Schuster, Random House, Penguin. I've worked with all of them. They're creeps in comparison.
And he'll never work with them again. But that's
it's over.
Honestly, I really don't care. The fact is that I can get excited doing work for this guy, whereas the big guys, the money was there. But the excitement level was getting chopped down with each new project that I did. It got chopped down just because they really didn't seem to give a shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were just kind of like, you were just product that they would toss out sometime, whether they paid attention to you or not, and then turn around and say, well, your book didn't sell, so we don't want any more. It's like, well, nobody knows the book existed because you did nothing to promote the book. Whereas Doug, on the other hand, he's this little guy, and he's like beating the bushes. I mean, he's amazing. I have nothing but praise for him.
Oh, that's very awesome. Cool. We do have a question here from the comments on YouTube. This is from It Came From The Radio. Would like to know, can they talk about how things have changed from when they first worked together to the current project?
she's much more sassy now.
Inevitable.
I think one of the first things I said when we started writing our novel was, I'll defer to you because you have experience, you've written all these novels before. And I think that lasted about
25 minutes.
Yeah. Look, you guys finish each other's sentences on the podcast too. It's amazing.
We do. But I think that's just a testament to the experience that I've gained by working with Tom. I read comic books at one point and then stopped. And then when he asked me to do the Vampirella special with him in late 2020 or 2021, I had absolutely no idea how to write a comic. And I was completely just dumbfounded. Like, I didn't understand anything that we were doing. We wrote it, it was great. And then recently we've been working on a project together for a graphic novel with a different company, with Mad Cave Studios, which hasn't been announced yet. But that one, like, I found myself being able to like lay things out by myself and kind of like, you know, like I think I took like four of the end chapters or something, and I did all of them by myself. So my confidence level with certain things has certainly gone up. But it's just because he's a really good teacher.
Aww. Oh, that's great.
That's cool.
Just to get back to the book for a second, or to start to wrap up here a little bit. Nira, a Constance Evermore story. So the implication is there's potentially more to this world, a whole lot more. Yeah. Is that something, given that you started with Woman With A Call and kind of went from there, again, like, from those simple beginnings, at what point did you start being like, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then realize that there was a lot more to this world?
Yeah, I think that's probably... Tom's better at plotting than I am, and like getting from point A to point B. Like, I generally know, like, where I'm going to start, and I kind of know where I'm going to end up, but, like, getting the middle part for me is still really a challenge, and that's, he's brilliant at that, because he just, like, comes up with it. It's amazing to me.
I think the more we talked about the character, and the more we kind of put down on paper in terms of, like, her history and her past, and it just kind of fed the imagination to say, you know, we could do stories in just about almost any time period. The character's been around for countless millennia, So she could, we could do stories in all kinds of different time periods, and she could do this, she could do, it was very much we kind of created like the fire that we just started to feed everything into, and it just started to grow. And of course in Bad Hand was kind of like, we want more, do more, we want, you know, more of these. So we're going to be switching off, we're going to be doing new Grim Death with Mignola. Janine and I and Mike will be doing new Grim Death stories, and then we'll switch off on that and we'll do new Nera, and then we'll go back to Grim Death. We're going to be going back and forth on that. Yeah, it's really exciting.
And before we let you go, anything else you want to plug? Tom, I know you got Herculoids is still
coming. Oh, I got Herculoids.
Yeah.
I got the Emperor Armageddon that I'm writing. The Grim Death stuff, like I said, that's the next big prose project that Janine and I will be doing. What else do I got? Do you remember?
We have something else.
We have a graphic novel. They keep telling us. Right. Every time I get all excited to say something about it, somebody from Mad Cave runs over and says, "You can't talk about it yet."
I'm like, "Oh, wow. They're on it.
When can I talk about it?" Yeah. So soon, I think.
Fall, really soon, yeah.
All right. Well, whenever you can talk about it, we'll definitely have you back.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much. Such a pleasure chatting. Yes. Congrats on the book.
I can't wait
excited
to check, it
to
all
check out.
Out
this whole world you are creating.
Super exciting. Super exciting. Can't wait for people.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you both. So have a great night.
Talk to you soon, guys.
Can't wait
all
to
right,
check it out.
There we go. Once again, it is called Nera, a Constance Evermore story, and it's coming out September 16th from Bad Hand Books.
Yeah, Bad Sounds Hand. Awesome, Bad Hand.
Yeah.
Love a Bad Hand. Love a Bad Hand. But I love your audience questions more. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments, and we will get to it. But why don't I ask? I was just thinking about this. What are you guys drinking?
What were you thinking about?
What are you guys drinking this evening? What's going on?
Oh, man. I'm drinking the per usual. It's not daytime out, but I'm daytime drinking.
Nice. Day drinking at night. That's of course. Right. Pete's always swimming upstream.
Mm-hmm. And Justin, I've started to see it on the show, so I assume you're having a pumpkin beer?
Yep, that's some good old-fashioned water.
Well. Bite it off my whatever. My water.
Look at me, Alex. I saw Alex, and I'm like Alex.
Wow. Look at us. I'm the only drinker left, left standing.
That's it.
Just right now. I'm sorry. Okay? I'm still coming off of a Bills victory on Sunday.
Wait, actually, I have a Bills related question for you guys. This
Ooh, hell yeah.
Is something that I think.
Yeah, this can't be real.
No, it's beef on weck related, kind of. Sandwich that I'm sure is very typical for you guys, but I had never heard before. A stinger sub?
Do you know about this? Stinger. Yeah.
Yeah. You know about a stinger?
I don't know what that is.
It's a Philly cheesesteak with buffalo chicken tenders
tenders. Yeah.
Inside of it.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. Is this something like, is like a last meal thing? I don't know if you could eat that.
It's the last thing you eat for sure before you die. Yeah. Pete, you've had one of these. So it's a Philly cheesesteak, buffalo chicken tenders, and then usually like lettuce, tomato, and blue cheese sauce, right?
Yeah. Great. But this, no, I've only seen it on the Instagram and the TikTok. I haven't eaten one in real life. That's
this thing's poison. Pete, have you eaten this or heard of it? Yes, I have. I'm chasing
it. It comes up on my feed because my algorithm knows, like, hey, you love this bullshit, right? And I'm like, yes, I do.
Great. We've probably seen
you would eat this, right? Yes, I would.
Yeah, I just figured it was sort of like everyday meal for you up there or something like that. Have you had, Pete, the Trolley Mountain Dew yet? Trolley Mountain Dew, however you pronounce it. Sour candies?
No? That's a Mountain Dew that tastes like Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
No, I had the new Trolley. I went to Taco Bell and had that like purple Mountain Dew. I don't know what that flavor is, but
what's happening with Mountain Dew? Are they hiding it now? Why do you have to go?
You have to go to special, dude. I went to KFC for that like orange, kind of like orange creamsicle.
Sweet Lightning?
No. I've already tried the Sweet Lightning. That's been for a while. But the orange creamsicle was just garbage. I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, I had jury duty and I tried the Justice Grape. Really intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like jury duty.
Yeah, exactly. This is so smart. Eventually, all we'll do is go around to different places and drink the dues.
Yeah.
Schreckler asked, for those of you who read prose, what books are you currently reading or read most recently?
Great question. I did mention this on Week in Geek, I think, a couple weeks ago, but I'm reading The Bright Sword, which is like sort of a modern post-Arthur's death, spoiler, Arthur dies, Arthurian Ooh. Legend story, which is really good. I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, man.
I gotta say, I was thinking the other day, I haven't read prose books in a while just because we've been reading so many comics.
Yeah, and... yeah, you keep saying me no read big ones.
Me yeah, not, no words, say. No likey. Yeah. No, I've been reading a crazy amount of comics, and also I think, like, since I've been freelance, I've been watching an insane amount of TV, even for me. I used to, like, relax and read a book, but now whenever I want to relax and read a book, I'm like, I should be watching TV so I can pitch on it instead.
Yeah. It's not That's great. What happened to me in video games. So I was like, let me relax and do this something I enjoy. And now it's, I don't.
Whoa.
Pete, you reading any books?
Not so much right now, but thanks for checking.
Hey, anytime.
Wellness check.
Still talking about books. Easy Reader says, do you guys get books graded? Do you prefer one company over another? Pete, you get stuff graded.
This is a Pete question.
Yeah, I don't. I get my comics sealed.
Yes, that
and
is what he's
sure.
actually asking.
For sure. Thank you.
I don't get
Now, like, do you get your novels graded?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. I always make sure, like, I have one that I like to read and then seal and grade the other one type of thing. Or if it's a comic that's so old and fragile that I won't crack it open just because I don't want to lower the value, then I'll definitely seal and grade. But, yeah, it's what sucks is, like, I had one sealed and graved and then I was moving and I dropped it and broke it open. And I was like, oh, now I gotta go do this all over.
You again. Unsealed it.
I unsealed it and ungraded it.
You can't be, the grade is over if once it's unsealed.
I don't know. I mean, they got to do it all again, I assume. You can't be like,
Did
oh, this
scream?
Is cool.
Was it like,
yeah. Ah! Yeah, and then a ghost of the money came out?
Yeah, it was like a little
I was worth this.
Can I ask you guys a follow-up related question? So blind bags are all the rage right now. Everybody's doing blind bags. I went into one of the stores near me, St. Mark's Comics, the other day, and they had a bunch of the Batman.
Couldn't make it all the way to midterm? Like, what the fuck, dude?
No, I don't. I go to the I support Brooklyn local shops that are smaller rather than the
How about
big
Midtown Comics who
monsters
supported us for years, bro?
And then they stopped, so I don't care anymore.
Wow. To be fair, I think they stopped because we just stopped going.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Also, good. I love them. They're great. They're the nicest people in the world. I'm totally joking. But yeah. I did go to St. Mark's Comics here in Brooklyn, and they had a big stack of the Batman number one blind as a bat blind bags. And I was like, oh, maybe I should get one. And then I looked at the price point, and it was $9.99 for each of them. I was like, I don't think I'm going to get one of these. But my question is, you get a blind bag.
Right.
Do you open the blind bag?
Yeah. Well,
you get two. You get one that you open and one you don't.
But here's the thing, though. Different.
They're all different. You might have it's like getting a lottery ticket and not scratching it off.
Oh. Right. But it seems kind of crazy, right? Like it feels like it brings down the value if you open it up.
But I think the value is derived from what's inside. You have to open a blind bag. If you're keeping a blind bag closed, you're eliminating the point of a blind bag.
But that's the fun is you save the blind bag for later.
For when? For when? Like your death?
Death. Time? Death.
Just before you're about to keel over. You say, excuse doctor. Me, sir, before you shoot me.
Oh, you're going to die in a violent...
Oh, and the doctor's like, I don't think we have time to open all of them.
Oh, man. That's like an ironic death right there.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for answering that. My audience question, Stanley says, do you think the entertainment industry is healthy or in trouble? How can the industry succeed in the future? Thank you, Stanley, for asking us. We can solve this problem here.
Yep. No problem.
Yeah.
It's in trouble.
Thank you, Stanley, for asking a question. I scream into a pillow every night before and after I go.
Yeah. To Hollywood Justin, why don't you tackle this one, bro?
I mean, it's not, there is no, it's hard to say healthy. The industry it's so big. And what happened, I'll just describe what happened to show with the problems. Like, for a long time, everyone was spending all this money and there was no worries about all the money. Then Netflix, because of streaming, growing their streaming service. Netflix finally was like, we fucked up. The Netflix write down, as it's been known, where they finally had to start showing profit. And that scared every streaming service into then having to show profit. So that meant that they winnowed down their production a ton. That's why there's way fewer scripted shows. And from like my side of things, like writers, directors, producers, that meant that all the shows they were making went way down. So a ton of people were invited into the industry. And then now they're all sitting there being like, I want to do more. So technically, I think the industry was a bubble for a while, and it's now it's shrunk sort of too far down, and hopefully it's going to slowly grow back. Not to like the Fed is probably going to lower the interest rates, raise the interest rates. It's lower the interest rates. That means that there's going to be more money out there, and that might actually help the entertainment industry have more money to make more stuff, is my understanding of it. So I do think it's in trouble for a lot of people who work in the industry, as they had jobs and now don't. But the industry can succeed in the future by, I think, making more cheaper things, which a lot of artists have been saying at the Oscars and Emmys and whatnot. It's like, hey, stop making, you know, three $200 million movies and make 30 $10 million movies. Or like there's a way to boil this down so that everyone can be working more and not everything has to make $1 billion, which doesn't happen anymore. And things can just be, you know, you can hit a double rather than have to hit what I'm calling like a triple home run on every movie.
Wow. Yeah. The Justin other thing that president. I throw out there is what did you say, Pete?
Justin for president.
Oh, Justin for president of SAG-AFTRA, at the very least.
Let me knock Fran Drescher out of there.
Oh.
The only other thing I'll throw out there is every industry is in trouble right now for a variety of reasons. So it's not just the entertainment industry, but I do think you're getting towards the heart of it. All in the Game says, hey, how would you rank your favorite comic book movies this year? Ooh, great question. Book movies 2025. Just
well, we've
sure.
got.
Is Sinners count?
No.
Nope. Damn. We got it, Fantastic
only,
Four.
Only Sinners doesn't count only in that it's not based on a comic book and has nothing to do with comic books.
Right. Otherwise, that's a great movie sure. this year that I was. Oh, 100%.
Can I rank pizza? I had a good pizza this year. Does that count? Because I liked it this year.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that counts.
Great. So I would put Sinners number one and pizza number two, and I think I'm done.
Nice. Well done. Way to be.
Yeah. We got Thunderbolts. We got Superman. We got Captain America Brave New World. Old Guard 2. This is a weird list that Google just served me up. Hold on. We've also got Fantastic Four, as Justin mentioned. And
I guess it's Thunderbolts
it.
For me.
That's it. Thunderbolts number one, nothing else?
That's right.
Interesting.
That Superman didn't rank for you?
Didn't even rank.
Wow.
Wow.
Just Thunderbolts, then zero from there.
I got to say, I think mine is Superman, Thunderbolts, Fantastic Four.
Interesting. I would put probably Fantastic Four, then Thunderbolts, I guess, then Superman, and then Captain America Brave New World.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
That's all right.
My list remains the same. Yeah. wow, that's crazy. Interesting. It's funny that you are so down on Superman, and I'm down on Fantastic Four, I guess. We're flipped. And Pete's down on both of those movies.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Lots of other great rankings happening in the comments, but we're going to wrap up here and move to our next section, which is trivia, and for that we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All righty, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for listening. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show, and even though Alex hates them, it's still a great comic experience going there. I always have a great time at Midtown Comics.
Interesting. Do you know what I also have a great time with before I forget, because I did forget earlier, is the drawer box storage system,
yes,
which has been nice enough to sponsor the show. I really got to stop forgetting that earlier. I apologize. Anyway, it is great. You can get short boxes. You can get long boxes. And the great thing about them is they are, per the name, drawers. They're made out of the same basic material as your regular long boxes and short boxes. But instead of having to take the lid off every time, you can put them on your shelves and pull out the drawers and put the comics in that way.
Genius.
I use them. My son uses them. They are awesome. And you can even stack them if you don't have shelves.
Six high.
Own shelves. Six high.
Yeah. And they also have dividers, which is great. So you don't have to fill it all the way up. Yeah. Because
you love the dividers.
Oh, man. The dividers really help. You know, it's a great experience.
So collectiondrawers.com, tell them Comic Book Club sent you. And it looks like we got David Quinley.
All right, David. All right, great. Today's trivia is about the comic Powers and a small nod to the legend, Eddie Palmieri. R.I.P., you Afro-Caribbean jazz master, you. All right, here we go. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. What year did the first comic come out? Is it A, the year 2000?
You're talking about the first Powers comic, not the first ever comic. Okay.
Yeah, the first Powers comic, because that's what today's trivia is about.
I know, but you said the first comic.
Yeah.
What year did this comic first come out?
Okay, thank you.
Is it A?
We won't go back and check the tape to find out if that's
the year
exactly
2000. I might have stumbled over my words. I apologize. B, I wish a good man would hold me. That's what she said. C, Holden Goodman.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Holden Goodman. He probably gets a lot of flack for that one, I got to say. Poor guy.
Pete, do you ever feel like, bad that you don't get to highlight people with just boring names or regular names?
No, I mean, those people are regular and boring. You know what I mean? What more do they need in life?
Just their names are, Pete.
Yeah, do you ever feel bad that you're not paying respect to people while they're still alive?
Give a shot to a living person, for God's sakes.
Some of these people
are
living.
What about Tom Hanks?
As far as I know, Holden Goodman is still with us.
Not anymore.
As far as you know?
Yeah.
I've been calling drone strikes on everybody that you mentioned. Is that bad?
Holy drone strikes. How many drones? We've been doing this for years.
So many drones. You know the patreon.com/comicbookclub? All those funds are going directly to my drone strikes.
All right. Well, that's horrible. We just lost all of our funding. Oh, man. I wondered where all that money was going.
I thought that's what you wanted.
Nope. Why would you think that? And he's correct. A is the correct answer. He said that.
I'm just getting word that Holden Goodman has just passed since he started his trip.
Oh, no. Oh, that's horrible.
Tragically.
Question number two. What award did this series win? And a reminder, in case Alex is going to be a dick again, we're talking about the comic book series Powers. Is it A, the 2001 Eisner for Best New Series? B, OMG, every time I hear your name, I think of that Pearl Jam song. C, Evan Frew.
Evan Frew?
Even Flow?
That's right.
Wow, Pete, that's a stretch, my guy.
Well, hold on to that.
True, but I know Pete's brain. A normal person doesn't. Ken Jennings. If you've been talking to Ken Jennings for 20 years on the phone, you can probably figure out what he's saying some of the time. Evan Flow Frew.
Assume David said A, so why don't we... Oh, he just said A. There we go.
Here we go. Last one. Powers, and again, we're talking about the Powers, the comic book series. Powers is blank. Is it A, a fantastic creator-owned comic? B, you know the song Even Flow, Thoughts Arrive Like Butterflies, you know? C, Even George.
Are you sure this isn't Evan George?
No, it's Even George. Evan Frew was the other one.
Evan Frew. Even Wait, George.
This Even movie George. Had two people with the first name Even in it?
Well, there's Evan, and then there's Even. Even is E-V-Y-N.
You know? It's very funny. Okay. It's funny that you made the Even Flow joke on someone named Evan, and you made an not an even flow joke on someone named Even.
Yeah, but still, Even George kind of sounds like the song again. You know what I mean? It started with Even George. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, we know. Well, David hasn't said it yet, but I think David won.
Yes, he did.
Well, did. Wow, I keep saying it. I keep preempting it. I'm sorry. Wow. I'm too impatient. Congratulations, David. You have won a gift card to Midtown Comics, a.k.a. the fifth ring of hell, if you ask me.
Hey, you knocked that off.
Email us and then take it somewhere else, obviously. Just burn it because it's probably cursed, let's be honest with you. God, Pete, awful. What are you paying tribute to here?
Of course, I'm talking about the 2025 Spike Lee Kurosawa-inspired joint, Highest to Lowest.
That's right. It just hit Apple TV Plus.
That's right.
Just the other day.
Excellent. You know what's hitting comic book stores tomorrow is new comics. What are you guys looking forward to that's coming out in stores, Pete?
Well, I'll tell you what. I can't wait to read. I hear it's going to be there in the stack, so I'm really looking forward to reading a new Punisher comic coming out. So, very excited for that.
That old chestnut?
But Absolute Batman number 12, I mean, this continues to be so badass. And so you guys are going to be shocked, but Transformers number 24, I mean,
Isn't this the last issue of these guys?
Yes, the final issue of Daniel Warren Johnson's run.
Wow. How will Optimus Prime get shamed in this issue?
Hey, that's how crazy. Dare
so he's
how
done, dare so I can call the drone strike on DWJ as well.
Don't I'll you just... da- I'll, no, I'm I will just drone strike it. You and your whole family.
Oh, okay. Wait, how do the drone strikes work? It's not just what people, Pete says the name, it's anyone who's done with anything.
Yeah, pretty much, because use do they have anymore?
You've gone mad with power.
Yeah.
What I'm looking forward to tomorrow is the following. Superman, the Kryptonite Spectre number 2 with our guys from Ice Cream Man coming back for a second issue that is really cool. Very excited to get back into that series tomorrow. Also looking forward to this is perhaps a controversial answer, but I am actually looking forward to the X-Men of Apocalypse comic. We're getting back into the Age of Apocalypse, an era of Marvel Comics I am very fond of.
I have a lot of
questions,
so you're going to have to help me with that.
No problem, Pete. I bet you, I can guarantee you I know many, if not all, of those weird answers.
Wow, that's great news.
Great picks, guys. I'm going to throw out a couple other ones. I'm really looking forward to Court Children of the Round Table, number 1. This is from Tom Taylor and Daniel DiNicolo, who wrote, I'm completely blanking on the name of the series, but they did a great all-ages series. I don't know. I'll think about it in a second. Anyway, they did a great series together. This is a original series set in the DC universe, which is a rarity. So excited to support that. Also, new issue of Trinity, Daughter of Wonder Woman. Really enjoying that series. And there's a new issue of Red Coat coming out tomorrow.
Red Coat is one I wanted to say.
You know what?
I come to love that book.
That series
is
great. I think
it's very good. When I was reading the last issue, I was like, this is one of my favorite series. It snuck right
out. And every single month, I'm like, Red Coat. Oh, wait, no, I love this.
That's how I start every two. I'm like, Red Coat. And then I'm like, wait, I like this.
So good series. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Fred Van Lente and Steve Orlando for coming on to talk about All New Harbinger, which is out tomorrow, and Exo Manowar, which is coming out on September 17th. Also, Tom Stagowski and Janine Acheson for talking about Nera, a Constance Evermore story, which is coming out September 16th from Bad Hand Books. Next week on the show, N.D. Stevenson is going to be here to talk about the new book, Scarlet Morning. So that's very exciting. Ooh. Comic Book Club News, our daily news show Monday through Friday. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast recapping Peacemaker. Man. Check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this show and all the shows we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night, folks.
Take care of yourself out there. We need you.
Grab your grin and don't be late for it though. Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.